Roche stopped and stood beside his donkey, while Rosamond cantered back to him, and they caught up, and Kivrin wondered wryly if he had lost his way. But as soon as they came up to him, he plunged off through a thicket and onto an even narrower path that wasn't visible from the road. Rosamond couldn't pass Father Roche and his donkey without shoving them aside, but she followed, nearly treading on the donkey's hind hooves, and Kivrin wondered again what was bothering her. "The Blowit has many powerful friends," Lady Imani had said. She had called him an ally, but Kivrin wondered if he really was, or if Rosamond's father had told her something about him that made her so distressed at the prospect of his coming to Ashencott. They went a short way along the path, past a thicket of willows that looked like the one by the drop, and then turned off the path, squeezing through a stand of firs and emerging next to a holly tree. Kivrin had been expecting holly bushes like the ones in Brazenose's quad, but this was a tree. It towered over them, spreading out above the confines of the spruces, its red berries bright among the masses of glossy leaves. Father Roche began taking the sacks from the back of the donkey, Agnes attempting to help him. Rosamond pulled a short, fat-bladed knife out of her girdle and began hacking at the sharp-leaved lower branches. Kivrin waded through the snow to the other side of the tree. She had caught a glimpse of white she thought might be the stand of birches, but it was only a branch, half fallen between two trees and covered with snow. Agnes appeared, with Roche behind her carrying a wicked-looking dagger. Kivrin had thought that knowing who he was would work some transformation, but he still looked like a cutthroat, standing there, looming over Agnes. He handed Agnes one of the coarse bags. "You must hold the bag open like this," he said, bending down to show her how the top of the bag should be folded back. "And I will put the branches into it." He began chopping at the branches, oblivious to the spiky leaves. Kivrin took the branches from him and put them in the bag carefully, so the stiff leaves wouldn't break. "Father Roche," she said, "I wanted to thank you for helping me when I was ill and for bringing me to the manor when I..."
"When that you were fallen," he said, hacking at a stubborn branch.
She had intended to say, "when I was set upon by thieves," and his response surprised her. She remembered falling off the horse, and wondered if that was when he had happened along, but if it was, they had already come a long way from the drop, and he wouldn't know where it was, and she remembered him there, at the drop. There was no point in speculating. "Do you know the place where Garwin found me?" she asked, and held her breath.
"Aye,"
he said, sawing at a thick branch. She felt suddenly sick with relief. He knew where the drop was. "Is it far from here?"
"Nay,"
he said. He wrenched the branch off. "Would you take me there?" Kivrin asked. "Why would you go there?" Agnes asked, spreading her arms out wide to keep the bag open. "What if the wicked men be still there?" Roche was looking at her as if he were wondering the same thing. "I thought that if I saw the place, I might remember who I am and where I came from," she said. He handed her the branch, holding it so she could take it without being stabbed.
"I will take you there," he said.
"Thank you," Kivrin said. "Thank you." She slid the branch in next to the others, and Roche tied the top shut and hoisted the bag over his shoulder. Rosamond appeared, dragging her bag in the snow behind her. Are you not finished yet? She said.
Roche took her bag too, and tied them on the donkey's back.
Kivrin lifted Agnes onto her pony, and helped Rosamond mount.
And Father Roche knelt and linked his big hand so Kivrin could step up into the stirrup. He had helped her back on the white horse when she fell off. When that she was fallen. She remembered his big hand steadying her. But they had come a long way from the drop by then, and why would Garwin have taken Roche all the way back to the drop? She did not remember going back. But it was all so dim and confused. In her delirium, it must have seemed farther than it was. Roche led the donkey back through the firs and onto the path, going back the way they had come. Rosamond let him get ahead and then said, in a voice just like Hermione's, "Where goes he now? The ivy lies not this way. We go to see the place where Lady Catherine was set upon," Agnes said. Rosamond looked at Kivrin suspiciously. "Why would you go thence?" she asked. "Your goods and gear have already been fetched to the manor." "She wots that if she sees the place, she will remember somewhat," Agnes said. "Lady Kivrin, if you remember you who you are, must you return home?" "That is, she will," Rosamond said. "She must needs return to her family. She cannot stay with us forever." She was only doing this to provoke Agnes, and it worked. "She can," Agnes said. "She will be our nurse." "Why would she wish to stay with such a mewling babe?" Rosamond said, kicking her horse into a trot. "I am no babe," Agnes called after her. "You are the babe." She rode back to Kivrin. "I do not wish you to leave me." "I won't leave you," she said. "Come, Father Roche is waiting."
He was at the road. And as soon as they rode up, he started on.
Rosamond was already far ahead, dashing along the snow-filled path, sending up sprays of snow. They crossed a little stream and came to a fork, the part they were on curving away to the right, the other continuing nearly straight for 100 meters or so, and then making a sharp jog to the left. Rosamond sat at the fork, letting her horse stamp and toss its head to express her impatience.
"I fell off the white horse at a fork in the road," Kivrin thought, trying to remember the trees, the road, the little stream, anything. There were dozens of forks along the paths that crisscrossed Witchwood Forest, and no reason to think this was the one. But it apparently was. Father Roche turned right at the fork, and went a few meters, and then plunged into the woods, leading the donkey. There were no willows where he left the road, and no hill. He must be going back the way Garwin had brought her. She remembered them going a long way through the woods before they came to the fork. They followed him into the trees, Rosamond in the rear, and almost immediately had to dismount and lead their horses. Roche wasn't following any path that Kivrin could see. He picked his way through the snow, ducking under low branches that showered snow down on his neck, and skirting around a spiny clump of blackthorn. Kivrin tried to memorize the scenery, so she could find her way back here, but it all had a defeating sameness. As long as there was snow, she could follow their footprints and hoofprints. She would have to come back alone before it melted, and marked the trail with notches or scraps of cloth or something, or breadcrumbs, like Hansel and Gretel. It was easy to see how they and Snow White and the princes had got lost in the woods. They had only gone a few 100 meters, and already, looking back, Kivrin wasn't sure which direction the road lay, even with the footprints. Hansel and Gretel could have wandered for months and never found their way back home, or found the witch's cottage either.
Father Osha's donkey stopped.
What is it?
Kivrin asked. Father Osha led the donkey off to the side and tied it to an alder tree.
This is the place.
It wasn't the drop. It was scarcely even a clearing. Only a space where an oak tree had spread out its branches and kept the other trees from growing. It made almost a tent, and under it the ground was only powdered with snow.
Can we build a fire?
Agnes asked, walking under the branches to the remains of a campfire. A fallen log had been dragged over to it. Agnes sat down on it.
I am cold, she said, poking at the blackened stones with her foot.
It hadn't burned very long. The sticks were barely charred. Someone had kicked dirt on it to put it out. Father Roche had squatted in front of her, the light from the fire flickering on his face.
Well,
Rosamond said impatiently, do you remember aught? She had been here. She remembered the fire. She had thought they were lighting it for the stake. But that couldn't be right. Father Roche had been at the drop. She remembered him leaning over her as she sat against the wagon wheel.
Are you sure this is the place where Garwin found me?
Aye, he said, frowning.
If the wicked man comes, I will fight him with my dirk, Agnes said, pulling one of the half-charred sticks out of the fire and brandishing it in the air.
The blackened end broke off. Agnes squatted next to the fire and pulled out another stick, and then sat down on the ground, her back against the log, and struck the two sticks together. Pieces of charred wood flew off them. Kivrin looked at Agnes. She had sat against the log while they made the fire, and Garwin had leaned over her, his hair red in the fire's light, and said something to her that she couldn't understand. And then he had put the fire out, kicking it apart with his boots, and the smoke had come up and blinded her.
Have you remembered you?
Agnes said, tossing the sticks back among the stones. Roche was still frowning at her.
Are you ill, Lady Catherine?
He asked. No, she said, trying to smile. It was just... I'd hoped that if I saw the place where I was attacked, I might remember. He looked at her solemnly a moment, the way he had in the church, and then turned and went over to his donkey.
Come, he said.
Have you remembered?
Agnes insisted, clapping her fur mittens together. They were covered with soot.
Agnes, Rosamond said, look you how you have dirtied your mittens.
She pulled Agnes roughly to her feet. And you have ruined your cloak sitting in the cold snow, you wicked girl. Kivrin pulled the two girls apart. Rosamond, untie Agnes's pony, she said. It is time to go gather the ivy. She brushed the snow off Agnes's cloak and wiped ineffectually at the white fur. Father Roche was standing by his donkey, waiting for them, still with that odd, sober expression. We'll clean your mittens when we get home, she said hastily. Come, we must go with Father Roche. Kivrin took the mare's reins and followed the girls and Father Roche back the way they had come for a few meters, and then in another direction that brought them almost immediately out onto a road. She couldn't see the fork, and she wondered if they were farther along the road, or on a different road altogether. It all looked the same, willows and little clearings and oak trees.
and it was clear what had happened. Darwin had tried to take her to the manor, but she had been too ill. She had fallen off his horse, and he had taken her into the woods and built a campfire and left her there, propped against the fallen log, while he went for help. Or he had intended to build a fire and stay there with her until morning, and Father Roche had seen the campfire and come to help, and between them they had taken her to the manor. Father Roche had no idea where the drop was. He had assumed Garwin had found her there, under the oak tree. The image of him leaning over her as she sat against the wagon wheel was part of her delirium. She had dreamed it as she lay in the sick room, the way she had dreamed the bells and the stake and the white horse. "Where does he go now?" Rosamond asked peevishly, and Kivrin felt like slapping her. "There is ivy nearer to home, and now it begins to rain." She was right. The mist was turning into a drizzle. "We could have been finished and home ere now if the babe Agnes had not brought her puppy." She galloped off ahead again, and Kivrin didn't even try to stop her. "Rosamond is a churl," Agnes said. "Yes," Kivrin said. "She is. Do you know what's the matter with her?" "It is because of Sir Blot," Agnes said. "She is to wed him."
"What?"
Kivrin said. Imani had said something about a wedding, but she'd assumed one of Sir Blot's daughters was to marry one of Lord Guillaume's sons.
"How can Sir Blot marry Rosamond? Isn't he already married to Lady Evolda?"
"Nay," Agnes said, looking surprised. "Lady Evolda is Sir Blot's sister."
"But Rosamond isn't old enough," she said,
and knew she was. Girls in the 1300s had frequently been betrothed before they were of age, sometimes even at birth. Marriage in the Middle Ages had been a business arrangement, a way to join lands and enhance social standing. And Rosamond had no doubt been groomed from Agnes's age to be married to someone like Sir Blot. But every medieval story of virginal girls married to toothless, dissipated old men came to her in a rush.
"Does Rosamond like Sir Blot?" Kivrin asked.
Of course she didn't like him. She had been hateful, ill-tempered, nearly hysterical ever since she heard he was coming.
"I like him," Agnes said. "He is to give me a silver bridal chain when they wed."
Kivrin looked ahead at Rosamond, waiting far down the road. Sir Blot might not be old and dissipated at all. She was assuming that, the way she had assumed Lady Evolda was his wife. He might be young, and Rosamond's bad temper might only be nervousness. Or she might change her mind about him before the wedding. Girls weren't usually married till they were 14 or 15, certainly not before they started exhibiting signs of maturation.
"When are they to be married?"
Kivrin asked Agnes.
"At Eastertide," Agnes said.
They had come to another fork. This one was much narrower, the two roads running nearly parallel for 100 meters, before the one Rosamond had taken started up a low hill.
12 years old, and to be married in 3 months.
No wonder Lady Eloise hadn't wanted Sir Blot to know they were here. Perhaps she didn't approve of Rosamond marrying so young, and the betrothal had only been arranged to get her father out of the trouble he was in. Rosamond rode to the top of the hill and galloped back to Father Roche.
"Where do you lead us?" she demanded. "We come soon to open ground."
"We are nearly there," Father Roche said mildly. She wheeled her mare around and galloped out of sight over the hill, reappeared, galloped back nearly to Kivrin and Agnes, turned the mare sharply and rode ahead again. Like the rat in the trap, Kivrin thought, frantically looking for a way out. The drizzle was turning into a sleety rain. Father Roche pulled his hood up over his tonsured head and led the donkey up the low hill. It plodded steadily up the incline to the top, and then stopped. Father Roche jerked on the reins, and the donkey pulled back against them. Kivrin and Agnes caught up to him. "What's wrong?" Kivrin asked.
"Come, Balaam,"
Father Roche said, and took hold of the reins with both his huge hands, but the donkey didn't budge. It strained against the priest, digging in its rear hooves and leaning back so it was nearly sitting. "Mayhap he likes not the rain," Agnes said.
"Can we help?" Kivrin asked.
"Nay," he said, waving them past him. "Ride ahead. It will go better with him if the horses are not here."
He wrapped the reins around his hand and went around behind as if he intended to push. Kivrin rode over the crest with Agnes, looking back to make sure the donkey didn't suddenly kick him in the head. They started down the other side. The forest below them was veiled in rain. It was already melting the snow from the road, and the bottom of the hill was a muddy bog. There were thick bushes on either side, covered with snow. Rosamond sat at the top of the next hill. It had trees only halfway up its sides, and above them there was an expanse of snow. "And beyond that," Kivrin thought, "is an open plain, and a view of the road, and Oxford."
"Where are you going, Kivrin? Wait!"
Agnes cried. But Kivrin was already down the hill and off her sorrel, shaking the snow-covered bushes, trying to see if they were willows. They were, and beyond them she could see the crown of a big oak. She threw the sorrel's reins over the reddish willow branches and pushed into the thicket. The snow had frozen the willow branches together. She struck at them, and snow showered down on her. A flurry of birds launched itself into the air, screeching. She fought her way through the snowy branches and pushed through to the clearing that had to be there. It was. And there was the oak, and beyond it, away from the road, the stand of white-trunked birches that had looked like thinner woods. It had to be the drop. But it didn't look right. The clearing had been smaller, hadn't it? And the oak had had more leaves on it, more nests. There was a blackthorn bush to one side of the clearing, its purple-black buds poking out from the vicious thorns. She didn't remember its being there. She would surely have remembered that, wouldn't she? "It's the snow," she thought. "It's making the clearing look larger."
It was nearly half a meter deep here and smooth, untouched. It didn't look as if anyone had ever been here.
"Is this the place where Father Roche would have us gather ivy?" Rosamond said, pushing through the thicket. She looked around the clearing, her hands on her hips. "There's no ivy here." There had been ivy, hadn't there? Wound around the base of the oak and mushrooms. "It's the snow," she thought. "The snow has covered up all the distinguishing landmarks. And the tracks, where Garwin had dragged away the wagon and the boxes. The casket." Garwin had not brought the casket back to the manor. He hadn't seen it, because she'd hidden it in the weeds by the road. She pushed past Rosamond through the willows, not even trying to avoid the showering snow. The casket would be buried in snow too, but it wasn't as deep by the road, and the casket was nearly 40 centimeters tall.
"Lady Kathryn," Rosamond shouted, right behind her, "where would you now?"
"Kivrin," Agnes said, a pathetic echo. She
She had tried to climb down off her pony in the middle of the road, but she had got her foot caught in the stirrup.
Lady Kivrin, come you here?
Kivrin looked at her blindly for a moment, and then glanced up the hill. Father Roche was still at the top, struggling with the donkey. She had to find the casket before he came.
Stay on your pony, Agnes, she said,
and began scrabbling at the snow under the willows.
What do you seek? Rosamond said.
There is no ivy here.
Lady Kivrin, you come now, Agnes said.
Perhaps the snow had bent the willows over, and the casket was farther in underneath them. She bent over, clinging to the thin, brittle branches, and tried to sweep the snow aside. But the trunk wasn't there. She had seen that as soon as she started. The willows had protected the weeds and the ground underneath them. There were only a few centimeters of snow.
But if this is the place, it must be here,
Kivrin thought numbly. If this is the place.
Lady Kivrin!
Agnes shouted, and Kivrin glanced back at her. She had managed to get down off her pony and was running toward Kivrin.
Don't run,
Kivrin started to say, but she didn't get it half out before Agnes caught her foot on one of the ruts and went down. It knocked the breath out of her, and Kivrin and Rosamond were both to her before she even started to cry. Kivrin scooped her into her arms and pushed her hand against Agnes's middle to straighten her and make her take a breath. Agnes gasped, and then drew in a long breath, and began to shriek.
Go and fetch Father Roche, Kivrin said to Rosamond. He's at the top of the hill, his donkey balked.
He is already coming, Rosamond said. Kivrin turned her head. He was running clumsily down the hill without the donkey, and Kivrin almost called out, don't run, to him too, but he could not have heard her over Agnes's screaming.
Shh, Kivrin said. You're all right. You just had the wind knocked out of you.
Father Roche caught up to them, and Agnes immediately flung herself across into his arms. He hugged her against him.
Hush, Agnes,
he murmured in his wonderful, comforting voice.
Hush.
Her screams quieted to sobs.
Where did you hurt yourself?
Kivrin asked, brushing the snow from Agnes's cloak.
Did you scrape your hands?
Father Roche turned her around in his arms, so Kivrin could take her white fur mittens off her. Her hands were bright red, but they weren't scraped.
Where did you hurt yourself?
She is not hurt, Rosamond said. She cries because she is a babe.
I am not a babe,
Agnes said with such force she nearly flung herself out of Father Roche's arms.
I struck my knee on the ground.
Which one? Kivrin asked.
The one you hurt before?
Yes.
Do not look,
she said as Kivrin reached for her leg.
All right, I won't,
Kivrin said. The knee had been scabbing over. She had probably knocked the scab loose. Unless it was bleeding badly enough to soak through her leather hose, there was no point in making her colder by undressing her here in the snow.
But you must let me look at it at home. Can we go thence now?
Agnes asked.
Kivrin looked helplessly across at the thicket.
This had to be the place. The willows, the clearing, the treeless crest.
It had to be the place.
Perhaps she had put the casket farther back in the thicket than she thought, and the snow.
I would go home now,
Agnes said, and began to sob.
I am cold.
All right, Kivrin nodded. Agnes's mittens were too wet to put back on her. Kivrin took off her borrowed gloves and gave them to her. They went all the way up Agnes's arms, which delighted her. And Kivrin began to think she had forgotten about her knee. but when Father Roche tried to put her on her pony, she sobbed, "I would ride with you."
Kivrin nodded again and got on her sorrel.
Father Roche handed Agnes up to her and led Agnes's pony up the hill.
The donkey was standing at the top, by the side of the road, eating the weeds that poked up through the thin snow.
Kivrin looked back at the thicket through the rain, trying to see the clearing.
"It's surely the drop," she told herself. But she wasn't sure. Even the hill looked somehow wrong from here.
Father Roche took hold of the donkey's reins, and the donkey immediately stiffened and dug in its hooves. But as soon as Father Roche turned its head and started down the far side of the hill with Agnes's pony, it came willingly. The rain was melting the snow, and Rosamond's mare slipped a little as she galloped it on the straight stretch back to the fork. She slowed it to a trot. At the next fork, Roche took the left-hand way. There were willows all along it, and oak trees, and muddy ruts at the bottom of every hill.
"Do we go home now, Kivrin?" Agnes said, shivering against her.
"Yes," Kivrin said. She pulled the tail of her cloak forward over Agnes.
"Does your knee still hurt?"
"Nay. We did not gather any ivy."
She sat up straight and twisted around to look at Kivrin.
"Did you remember you when you saw the place?"
"No," Kivrin said.
"Good,"
Agnes said, settling back against her.
"Now you must stay with us forever."
Chapter 17. Andrews did not telephone Dunworthy until late afternoon on Christmas Day. Colin had, of course, insisted on getting up at an ungodly hour to open his small pile of gifts.
"Are you going to stay in bed all day?"
he demanded while Dunworthy groped for his spectacles.
"It's nearly 8 o'clock.
It was, in fact, 6:15. Pitch black outside, too dark even to see if it was still raining. Colin had had a good deal more sleep than he had. After the ecumenical service, Dunworthy had sent Colin back to Balliol and gone to infirmary to find out about Latimer. "He has a fever, but no lung involvement thus far," Mary had told him. "He came in at 5:00. Said he'd started feeling headachy and confused around 1:00. 48 hours on the button. And there's obviously no need to question him to find out who he contracted it from. How are you feeling?" She had made him stay for blood tests. And then a new case had come in, and he'd waited to see if he could identify him. It was nearly 1:00 before he'd gone to bed. Colin handed Dunworthy a cracker and insisted he snap it, put on the yellow tissue paper crown and read his motto aloud. It said, "When are Santa's reindeer most likely to come inside? When the door is open." Colin was already wearing his red crown. He sat on the floor and opened his gifts. The soap tablets were a huge success. "See," Colin said, sticking out his tongue. "They turn it different colours." They did. Also his teeth and the edges of his lips. He seemed pleased with the book, though it was obvious he wished there were hollows. He flipped through the pages, looking at the illustrations.
"Look at this," he said,
thrusting the volume at Dunworthy, who was still trying to wake up. It was a knight's tomb, with a standard carved effigy in full armor on top, his face and posture the image of eternal rest. But on the side, in an inset frieze like a window into the tomb, the dead knight's corpse struggled up in his coffin, his tattered flesh falling away from him like grave wrappings, his skeleton's hands curved into frantic claws, his face a skull's empty, socketed horror. Worms crawled in and out between his legs, over and under his sword. Oxfordshire, circa 1350, the caption read. An example of the macabre tomb decoration prevalent following the bubonic plague.
Isn't it apocalyptic? Colin said delightedly.
He was even polite about the muffler.
I suppose it's the thought that counts, isn't it? He said, holding it up by one end, and then after a minute, perhaps I can wear it when I visit the stick. They won't care what it looks like.
Visit what stick? Dunworthy asked. Colin got up off the floor and went over to his duffel and began rummaging through it.
The vicar asked me last night if I'd run errands for him, check on people, and take them medicine and things.
He fished a paper bag out of the duffel.
This is your present, he said, handing it to Dunworthy. It's not wrapped, he added unnecessarily. Finch said we ought to save paper for the epidemic.
Dunworthy opened the bag and pulled out a flattish red book.
It's an appointment calendar, Colin said. It's so you can mark off the days till your girl gets back.
He opened it to the first page.
See? I made sure to get one that had December.
Thank you, Dunworthy said, opening it. Christmas. The slaughter of the innocents. New Year's. Epiphany. That was very thoughtful.
I wanted to get you this model of Carfax Tower that plays I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day, Colin said. But it cost £20.
The telephone rang and Colin and Dunworthy both dived for it.
I'll bet it's my mother, Colin said.
It was Mary, calling from the infirmary. How are you feeling?
Half asleep, Dunworthy said.
Colin grinned at him.
How's Latimer? Dunworthy asked.
Good, Mary said. She was still wearing her lab coat, but she'd combed her hair and she looked cheerful. He seems to have a very mild case. We've established a connection with the South Carolina virus.
Latimer was in South Carolina?
No. One of the students I had you question last night. Good Lord. I mean 2 nights ago. I'm losing all track of time. One of the ones who'd been at the dance in Headington. He lied at first because he'd skipped off from his college to see a young woman and left a friend to cover for him.
Skipped off to South Carolina?
No, London. But the young woman was from the States. He'd flown in from Texas and changed planes in Charleston, South Carolina. The CDC's working to find out what cases were in the airport. Let me speak to Colin. I want to wish him a happy Christmas. Dunworthy put him on, and he launched into a recital of his gifts. Down to and including the motto in his cracker.
Mr. Dunworthy gave me a book about the Middle Ages.
He held it up to the screen.
Did you know they cut off people's heads for stealing and stuck them up on London Bridge?
Thank her for the muffler, and don't tell her you're running errands for the vicar,
Dunworthy whispered. But Colin was already holding the receiver out to him.
She wants to speak to you again.
It's clear you're taking good care of him, Mary said. I'm very grateful. I haven't been home yet, and I should have hated him to be alone on Christmas. I don't suppose the promised gifts from his mother have arrived?
No,
Dunworthy said cautiously, looking at Colin, who was looking at the pictures in the Middle Ages book.
Nor telephoned?
She said disgustedly. The woman hasn't a drop of maternal blood in her body.
For all she knows, Colin might be lying in hospital with a temp of 40 degrees, mightn't he?
How's Badree? Dunworthy asked.
The fever was down a bit this morning, but there's still a good deal of lung involvement. We're putting him on synthomycin. The South Carolina cases have responded very well to it. She promised to try to come over for Christmas dinner and then rang off. Colin looked up from his book.
Did you know in the Middle Ages they burned people at the stake?
Mary didn't come, nor telephone, and neither did Andrews. Dunworthy sent Colin over to Hall for breakfast and tried phoning the tech, but all the lines were engaged due to the holiday crush, the computer voice said, obviously not reprogrammed since the beginning of the quarantine. It advised him to delay all non-essential calls until the next day. He tried twice more with the same result. Finch came over bearing a tray.
Are you all right, sir? He said anxiously. You're not feeling ill.
I'm not feeling ill. I'm waiting for a trunk call to come through.
Oh, thank goodness, sir. When you didn't come over for breakfast, I feared the worst.
He took the rain-spotted cover off the tray.
I'm afraid it's a poor sort of Christmas breakfast, but we're nearly out of eggs. I don't know what sort of Christmas dinner it will be. There isn't a goose left inside the perimeter.
It actually seemed to be quite a respectable breakfast. A boiled egg, kippers, muffins with jam.
I tried for a Christmas pudding, sir, but we're nearly out of brandy, Finch said, pulling a plastic envelope out from under the tray and handing it to Dunworthy.
He opened it. On top was an NHS directive headed, Early Symptoms of Influenza. 1. Disorientation. 2. Headache. 3. Muscle aches. Avoid contracting it. Wear your NHS regulation face mask at all times.
Face mask? Dunworthy asked. The NHS delivered them this morning, Finch said. I don't know how we're going to manage the washing up. We're nearly out of soap.
This ends Side 2 of Cassette 8 of Doomsday Book. Please fast forward to the end before loading Cassette 9.